you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it.
Gorgeous Food and Drink with Nikki Bannerman.
Gorgeous food and gorgeous chocolate. We all have an indulgent passion for chocolate and tempt ourselves occasionally. But has chocolate now become more of an artisan food experience? I'm here with the doyenne of chocolate making in the UK. This is Nikki Bannerman, and I'm delighted to welcome the founder of Rococo Chocolates, Chantal Cody, to Radio Gorgeous. Chantal, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi.
Great to have you here today.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Lovely. I'm so delighted to be here in your enchanting chocolate emporium, if I can call it that, in London. Now, you actually dreamt about this as a child. Is that right, Chantal?
That's absolutely true. Sounds a bit sad, but yes, I used to read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the book, way before the movie. And I used to go to sleep, and I did actually dream. I was walking through this amazing land, which was like the factory. So there's rivers of chocolate. There was grass, which was made out of mint sugar. There were trees that had sweets on them. I actually used to pick the sweets in my dream, and I'd gather them in my skirts, and I would put them under my pillow in the dream, which is a bit strange. And in the morning, I'd wake up, and I'd put my hand under the pillow, and there was nothing there, and I was so upset.
It wasn't there, so you thought you'd better create this. Is it a recurring dream then?
It was, yeah, definitely. I had it several times, and I used to tell my mother in the morning and say, so sad, there were no sweets.
She said, we'll build you a factory, darling.
I think perhaps we weren't encouraged to eat that many sweets as well, so it was one of those kid things.
Driven by frustration. So tell us how Rococo Chocolates and the name was born.
Well, when I was an art student, I was working in Harrods chocolate department, and we were selling the most amazing, luxurious chocolates. And I thought it was so exciting. And I wanted to share my joy and love about this magical product. But somehow the environment there wasn't very conducive to that. There were a lot of people who had to stand in lines waiting to be served. And when they finally arrived at the, you know, the top of the queue, they were not treated with the wonderful, you know, customer service which I would expect they should have had. And I think probably it's not really a criticism of them particularly. I think that was just normal at that time. I think I had understood about an emotional interaction with a customer because of my particular, where I was coming from as such a passionate, you know, chocolate and sweet person.
So it's that emotional engagement, you really wanted to bring that alive. That's how it worked.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, I wanted to create this magical space as well. So it was very much about the surroundings being much more theatrical and indulgent, and to make people feel that they could come in and just really get into this world of chocolate.
I'm so pleased to be here. Now, the name was born. How did that come about? The name Rococo.
The name came into my head as a light bulb moment in the middle of a brainstorming session that we were having when I went to a little business course. So at the beginning, I went and did Manpower Services Commission. This is under Margaret Thatcher, to try and encourage entrepreneurs. So I did my mini course. And in the middle of that course, we had to present to the fellow students. And I said, I can't tell you the name of my business. It's top secret. And they said, oh, come on, just make something up. So I literally just, the words Rococo tumbled out of my mouth. I can't tell you why, but they did. And everyone said, but that's perfect. It's brilliant. You've got to use it. And then I went away and I looked it up in the dictionary, and I discovered the real meaning of it, which is from the French word rocaille, meaning shell and scroll work, and referring to an 18th century period of decoration, which is asymmetric and, you know, breaks the rules a bit. And I just thought, it's absolutely perfect.
Wow, it certainly is.
Gorgeous Food and Drink on Radio Gorgeous.
So you were hugely influenced by the French of the Baroque period then, really. The ornate gold and elaborate features, is that right? You must have a passion for Italy too. Didn't your first chocolate boutique include a Botticelli painting in Chelsea?
That's right. We had Venus painted on the ceiling with the little putti flying around her. Absolutely beautifully done by my friend Frank Taylor.
Wow, on the ceiling. That's divine. So describe the packaging imagery that we recognise from the shops. I've got a copy of the blue and white here. How did that come about?
That's an old chocolate mould catalogue from French 19th century company. And I was given the book, or at least I was sold the book, by a lovely antiquarian bookseller who's a friend. And he came in and he said, here's a book that you have to buy it, he said, because I know you're going to do something amazing with it. And it was really expensive. You know, at that time, it probably cost the equivalent of a couple of weeks' wages. And I wrote out the check. He gave me a little discount. And then within a very short period of time, I picked my favourite pages. I photocopied them. I cut them up and removed the extraneous bits around the side. And with my textile design degree, which I'd spent 4 years doing this, within about 10 minutes, I'd created a random repeating pattern. And I took it to my printer, and he went, wow, that's incredible. Anyway, we printed it out, and the rest is history.
Gosh, so you designed it yourself and came up with a concept. That is a magical journey, isn't it?
Well, I guess, you know, it's 4 years condensed into 10 minutes is quite useful.
So what about the presentation of the chocolates? Where did your idea for these chocolates, there's some there that I'm dying to get hold of, where did the ideas come from?
Well, there are lots of different ways you can do it. Sometimes if you're working with a mould, you can actually, we do a lot of decoration, hand decoration with colours and things like gold and silver. There are others where we can use a transfer, but these are actually made, so you're looking at a cocoa, little cocoa pod with splatters of colour on it. So that's just done by hand in our chocolate kitchen.
Wow, I'm going to ask you some of those when we come on to the tasting bit. But they're a vision of beauty and art, as is the design that I see in front of me. Amazing. So 3 decades, you've become the biggest producer of handcrafted chocolate in Britain. Are they literally artisan and made by hand then, as you say?
These ones are literally. I mean, we make them a kilo at a time. It takes about 3 or 4 days for the process beginning to make a ganache, let it crystallize and set, and then put it through so it's dipped in chocolate and do the finishing of them. So yes, it's like making a pair of shoes or a handbag or a suit. It's absolutely bespoke.
Wow, that's amazing. So how does that handcrafting process work in terms of from the raw ingredients to the confectionery? You're saying the ganache.
Well, that's, we start, our raw material is chocolate. We don't go back to the bean in this country. We have a relationship with Grenada, with the Grenada Chocolate Company, and we actually have our own cocoa farm there. So what we do in that sense, if you want to go back to the tree, is the growing of the cocoa pods, the harvesting of the fruit, the fermentation. It's like making wine. It's a long process. So the beans are fermented for about a week, which brings out all the complex polyphenols and the amazing chocolate flavors. After that, they have to be dried, then they have to be roasted, then they're stone ground, and that becomes chocolate after that. And some of that chocolate we are using in some of our recipes, but we're getting blocks of chocolate at that stage, and we also get blocks of chocolate from places like Madagascar, from Peru, from other single origin beans, and we have our own organic blend of chocolate as well.
Try something tasty. Listen to Radio Gorgeous.
So you add the flavours and the design and everything and actually literally handcraft it from that.
Yeah. So at that point, and we have our two main ranges. We have the Rococo Couture collection, which is what you're looking at here. And then we also have the Rococo Artisan collection, which is, this is more, we call this choc-à-porter because you can pick it up off the shelf and carry it out. It also lasts for much longer. So things like, this is our sea salt chocolate bar I'm holding. And all the designs are inspired by our little garden in Belgravia. We have an amazing Moroccan garden with all these beautiful tile designs. So each one has its own little personality, its own particular look, and its own recipe.
Gosh, I love that. So you really bring art and fashion, choc-à-porter couture. It's really bringing those amazing fashion, design and style to your products. Beautiful. You were really ahead of the game starting this artisan shop over 30 years ago. I don't think you look old enough. It must be all that chocolate you're eating. So yes, tell me about that one.
So this sea salt bar is, I'm very, very proud of it. And I believe I'm the first person to have created this. And I was walking along the beach in Cornwall about 1999. I remember because I had my son with me, and I think I was pregnant with my daughter. And I was licking an ice cream. And as I licked the ice cream, I was getting these little crystals of salt that had formed on my lips, mixing in with it. And I thought, that's really, really good with the ice cream. And if it works with that, I think it worked really well with our milk chocolate. So we created the milk chocolate sea salt.
That's a beautiful concept because it's, again, that emotional journey. It transports you back to where you were and those memories and everything. A bit like the Willy Wonka golden ticket.
Absolutely. And we have a whole range of flavours. We've got a basil with Persian lime. We've got an orange marmalade bar, which I've got a sample you can have a taste of in a minute. We do gold, frankincense and myrrh. We have violet, which is a pure violet flavour, which is not, it's not perfumey in that sense. It's more like, you know, when you get a violety wine, it's intense and deep and rich. We've got rose, which is made from organic rose otto, which is about almost the same price as gold per ounce.
Goodness me, it's just a whole new concept. So is chocolate still meant to be good for you?
Chocolate is absolutely, definitely good for you. You can Google it, you can read the articles in the MBA, in all sorts of medical publications around the world. And recently there's a big thing about fermented food being incredibly important because it helps to keep your digestion in really good order. And a lot of foods that people eat are completely dead. But what you need is you need the good microbes in your system. And of course, chocolate is a fermented food.
We've got no excuse now, have we?
Gorgeous Food and Drink on Radio Gorgeous.
Just like to ask you about when you got an OBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours List. I mean, that is phenomenal, isn't it? What an accolade. How did you feel?
Well, I was completely gobsmacked. I just actually didn't believe that this letter telling me, well, it was asking me whether I'd be prepared to accept it in the first place. And I thought it was some kind of scam. And it just was a weird little brown envelope with some folded up photocopied bits of paper in it. And I just thought, this isn't true. You know, someone's just having a joke.
No, so it came to your business address or your home address, did it? How did they find you?
It came to my home address and I opened it. And it was at night time because, you know, the post doesn't come early anymore. And I was really tired and I just said, I don't want to read this. And I just tossed it down. I thought, you know, first of all, I thought it was a parking ticket. And then when I read the thing, I thought, this is just nonsense. And then finally, my husband said, no, I think that might be serious. You should have a proper look at it.
Thank goodness for him. You could have tossed it in the bin. So you went along. But how did it feel accepting that award? You must have been so proud of yourself.
I was incredibly proud, but not just for myself, but for everyone else who's helped me, because you can't do this alone. You have to have an amazing support team. My family have been outstanding. My mother actually gave the deeds of the family house to the bank when I started. So without her, the business would never have taken off. I had my siblings helping in the early days. My husband has been incredible. And it's, you know, the Rococo thing, it's like a big family. And I feel very, very well supported by all of them.
Oh, that's a lovely accolade for all of you. Now, what was she like, Queen Elizabeth II?
It was the Duke of Cambridge, Prince William, who was actually doing the investiture the day when I went to the palace.
What an honour to meet anyone from the palace, isn't it? What a great thing. Well done, you.
So your business is now part of history. Now, wasn't your accolade for a lifetime dedication to the chocolate world and the first time a chocolatier has been recognised in this way, was that right?
It is the very first time that they have awarded something. It's actually called for services to chocolate making.
So you're not just the founder of Rococo Chocolates, but you created the Academy of Chocolate, is that right? The British School of Chocolate, and have written 5 books on the subject and talked about the theatre of chocolate, as you said earlier. What was your thinking behind the school and the academy that you created?
Well, the academy was a few professionals together, so I'm one of the founders of it. But that was very much about awareness of chocolate, why it's good for you, you know, why it's important to have particular type of cocoa beans, really differentiating between fine flavour chocolate and industrial chocolate. So it was continuing on from the work I'd done setting up the Chocolate Society, which was in the early 90s. And then the School of Chocolate, that's more of a kind of generic thing, which is trying to help people to understand how to make chocolate, because technically it's extremely difficult. And one of my frustrations as a child was trying to make chocolate into an egg and not understanding what I needed to do to get it to release from the mould and to be shiny and snappy and beautiful.
RadioGorgeous.com.
You've published 5 books in several languages and all of them on chocolate. From The Connoisseur's Guide to the Food of the Gods, The Chocolate Companion, Inspiring Recipes for Chocolate Indulgence and Chocolate Appreciation, and Mastering the Art. You certainly know everything there is to make us feel good about chocolate, don't you? Have you got another book in the process?
No books planned at the moment. They take such a long time, and I've got so many other projects at the moment.
What other projects have you got on?
Well, in fact, interestingly, and it does tie back to the book and to the Roald Dahl thing, we're creating a range of bars inspired by the books. We have the license from the Roald Dahl family to create some amazing chocolate bars.
Oh, what a lovely idea, because you do that at some of your cooking schools as well, don't you? You call them all these fabulous names.
Yeah.
Oh, how wonderful. Have you ever met him, Roald Dahl, before he died?
I didn't meet him, sadly.
That would have been a dream come true, wouldn't it? So was the book Rococo Mastering the Art of Chocolate your last book?
That is my last book, my most recent book. That book is a really beautiful book which comes in a box, but my thinking behind it was to tell my story and to share all of my learning over 30 years and to make chocolate really accessible to people. So breaking it down into small bite-sized pieces.
Literally bite-sized. I love the signature image of the cocoa pod on the front of the book that you've got upstairs. Again, this is back to the blue and white. French, are they from the French actual chocolate moulds that you'd said?
In the 19th century, they used to create moulds by pressing them out. So they'd have a positive form and then a piece of soft metal like tin or zinc or something. And so you could order 1 or 2 from the book and then they just punch them out and send them off to you. Nowadays, people don't use those moulds because they're made of metal and they're not necessarily the best thing to use because they conduct heat. So we use a kind of polycarbonate is the standard now, which is very hard, very shiny, and much easier to work with.
And gets these perfect results. I mean, even looking at the tablecloth here, the blue and white randomly sort of repeated pattern is just stunning, isn't it? You never get bored with this, do you? So you've also got charity interests. You touched on the cocoa farm and the sustainability projects because you jointly own it. How exotic is that to own a cocoa farm? Can you share some of the triumphs and how you've helped them with your philanthropic mind?
Well, I think it's often with these things where you're working with a completely different culture. It's a real exchange, actually. It's a two-way thing. So I'm learning from them, and then I'm able to teach them some things about, you know, the more perhaps fine, sophisticated side of making chocolate. maybe some of the marketing things, some of the ways that we do things here. So it's really a fantastic exchange. And we've been working with them for probably about the last 12 years, 13 years. And tragically, two of the three founders of Grenada Chocolate Company have since died. So we're just left with one of the original ones. And that's been a really painful process for everyone. But we've been very much supporting them, trying to keep the legacy alive and the spirit in which the company was formed, but take it into the future to give it a really solid business model.
I'm so sorry. But you helped them so greatly with things like the hurricane that they suffered from and have helped in terms of building the economy there. Is that right? The things you've given back?
It is, I think, something that Grenada is now becoming incredibly proud of, that they have fantastic quality cocoa on the island. And it's becoming like a little halo. And everyone from the outside world is looking in and thinking about Grenada as a chocolate place rather than maybe just about rum or nutmeg or some of the other things which they've been famous for.
Wow, so that's a beautiful thing you've done there too. I know that I'd read that they also have motor-free sail freighters. Is that true? Is that how they deliver your chocolate?
It is true. There's a brilliant small company called the Tres Hombres, the three men, and they are actually three Dutch guys who set up, they restored a brigantine, and their idea is that you can transport things around the world without putting any pollution into the ocean. And yeah, I'm very passionate about that sort of thing, and you see these big containers going around the world, and they are some of the dirtiest, most polluting vessels that you can imagine, and that our oceans are dying as a result of that. So yes, we've had several shipments coming over on that beautiful boat, and I've even been on it for the short run just from the Isle of Wight into Portsmouth the last time that she came in and unloaded chocolate.
Wow, you really are living the dream.
Gorgeous Food and Drink with Nikki Bannerman.
Are we going to be tempted with sampling some of your sumptuous chocolates then? What have we got here? Do you want to talk us through this? Weren't truffles your first ever?
Yes, I mean, truffles are fantastic and actually really simple to make. So if you get my book, we've got all the recipes. And I think it's one of the things that you can make yourself and serve to your friends, family, and really impress them, because the fresher they are, the more delicious.
They look absolutely stunning. Do you want to tell me what we're looking at here?
It's our Madagascar house truffle. So this is our first and favourite chocolate, made with, it's a square shape, but inside it has this really soft melting filling. So it's just chocolate with butter and cream, that's all. The Madagascan chocolate is known for being very, very fruity. It's a Criollo bean, which is one of the best single origin beans. And it has notes of citrus, red berries, plums, raspberries, that sort of thing. But there's no flavour added to it. That's just the chocolate that gives that flavour.
It looks absolutely beautiful. So that's dusted in cocoa. That's a small sort of little cube here. Are we allowed to have a little nibble? How often do you eat these then?
Well, interestingly, because I'm surrounded by chocolate, I can have whatever I want whenever I want it. But that means I'm quite abstemious, actually. But I will. If I feel like chocolate, I'll always eat it.
Silly, not. I'd be completely gorging out. Right, I'm going to try this truffle now, so I'll just have a lick first, if that's not too revolting. Oh gosh, yes, the cocoa you can taste there, and I'm going to have a nibble. Yes, it has got a crunch as you bite into it. That's just divine. Melts in the mouth. Slightly bitter. Oh, that's just gorgeous inside, isn't it? And nicer to have a little rectangular one rather than the traditional round one. Oh, that's beautiful. It's really strong and really cocoa-y, isn't it?
I think the idea doing it like that is you can have a thinner shell and you make the truffle first and then you put the coating on afterwards. Whereas the ones, the ball-shaped ones, are injected. It's a bit more of an industrial process.
Oh, that's so true. That has got a shell. Gosh, I'm going to have another nibble. Beautiful. Thank you.
Try something tasty. Listen to Radio Gorgeous.
What else have we got here then?
So This is the Rococo Couture collection we were talking about before, and we've got a calamansi lime caramel, which is a really delicious because it's got a caramel centre, but it's the zingy, zesty lime flavour comes through to make it not so sweet. The next one is we've got a passion fruit caramel again, but it's a slightly different texture. It's a bit more of a chewy one. Then we've got, this is in our summer collection, I think there's passion fruit and mango. Rhubarb and custard is the next one. And then I've just put one of our crunchy, salty toffee, which is, it's kind of classic. We keep winning medals with these chocolates.
Which one here is your biggest seller then?
I think the toffee one is very, very popular.
Really? Well, you have one as well. Why don't you... Will you try one of those and describe that to me, and then I'll try this salted caramel one.
You can see the colour, sort of orangey. It's actually full of fruit. Wow. And it's a soft, it's not a runny caramel, it's slightly chewy.
And again, it's got that shell, and it's got these beautiful stripes, almost as though someone's painted it with a brush. What's that about?
It's just a cocoa butter pattern. But this one, it's lovely because it has got incredible fruitiness and some acidity, which personally I love that.
Beautiful. Okay, I'm going to try and nibble with that. The lime one that you mentioned, it literally is the shape of a cocoa pod, as you said, but it has green sort of very daintily painted splodges on the very dark chocolate. Is that right?
They're actually splashed into the mould.
Well, this is just beautiful. Oh, that is really lovely inside. It is fruit, so it's actually good for you. They're just divine.
So many chocolates are really much too sweet for my taste. So this isn't to everyone's taste. And in fact, I had a lovely French friend who tried them, who's been in the business for years and years, and he said to me, I have to tell you, they're too acidic. And I said to him, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I thank you so much for sharing it with me, but I promise you it's not a mistake. We actually do that deliberately because that's our particular style of making chocolate. And the French are more traditional, more safe, and when you taste the toffee, crunchy toffee, that's more in the French tradition.
Yes. I mean, they really are an indulgent chocolate, though, aren't they, in that you would really enjoy every one and have them slowly and not have too many. You know, you wouldn't sit in front of the telly and eat loads of them, would you? Or maybe you do, do you?
Well, I think hopefully not. And I think that's it. It's such a good experience. Like drinking an amazing glass of wine, you don't just knock it back and it doesn't hit the sides. You have to eat it slowly and enjoy it. And that way it really hits the spot and it's incredibly satisfying.
It is. It's an explosion of flavours, isn't it? Gosh, I love this job. Thank you for asking me here. So, can you describe some of the more unusual chocolate flavours? You'd mentioned before how they came about from your lovely Moroccan garden. Was that thinking about flowers and herbs, just trying new flavours? Are you coming up with new ones all the time?
We are. We're constantly experimenting. And often when I'm travelling, I might taste something and just get an inspiration of a combination that could work very well.
Wow. Now, it was rumoured that your shops were an inspiration for Joan Harris's book, Chocolat, and even the subsequent film with Juliette Binoche. Is that right?
Well, who knows? But there's an awful lot of things in that book which are very similar to the way that we did stuff. And I believe that Joan Harris was a customer in the shop. And I also was sent a book by the publisher before it was published.
Oh, that's interesting. I think you should definitely take that rumour and enjoy the compliment, because it was about a chocolaterie. I can't even say the word. Chocolaterie, is that right? How do you say that word?
Yes, or chocolatière.
Chocolatière. And it was literally about that, wasn't it? She started it in France and people didn't understand the concept, but now everyone loves it the same as they love your shop. What a lovely compliment.
I loved the movie and the book, actually. They're both great.
Get Juliette Binoche in here.
Listen to us online, on your phone, download a podcast, or on your tablet. Radio Gorgeous, there for you.
So you've also won a prize from the Academy of Chocolate for changing the way people think about chocolate. Is that right?
That's right. And again, it's all about going back to how chocolate has been traditionally in this country. We are not an artisan food culture. We're beginning to be now, but it's taken us a long time. So if you think back to the 1970s and before, it was all about sliced white bread and baked beans and producing food as cheaply as possible to feed the masses. And chocolate was exactly like that. So a lot of sugar, artificial vanilla flavour, very little cocoa, and just, you know, other fats and things were being put in chocolate. It's not, you can't really call that chocolate.
This certainly you can. And was that ahead of or before the coffee craze and the different flavours that are now around?
Oh, it's before the coffee craze. I mean, we haven't been drinking good coffee for that long. It's probably 15 years, do you think?
So really, yes, you've done this for 3 decades. You're a pioneer. Now, I've heard talk about a possible chocolate decline or shortage in the future. Is that really a possibility?
It's a real possibility. The main reason I'm worried is, well, the farmers are not being paid enough to make it worth their while growing the cocoa. So that's on one side, on the supply side. And then on the demand side, if the Chinese get a taste for chocolate, well, even if 1% of them start eating it, that is a huge demand.
That's what I've read, actually, that there's a rise in popularity in Asia for chocolate. They've now had a tasting of it, and that the trees are getting too old.
Well, I'm not too worried about the trees getting too old, because you can plant new trees, and it doesn't take that long. It's probably 5 years to get a tree to fruiting. But I think the thing we need to be more concerned about is the agricultural side and getting the populations of the places where the cocoa grows to be more passionate and better rewarded for their very hard work in growing the cocoa.
Definitely. So I'm going to start stockpiling some supplies now, unless you can promise me a lifetime of chocolate. I was very impressed you cycled here today as well for our chat. Now, was that because you're saving the planet or because you don't want to put on weight with eating all this chocolate?
I love my bicycle. I've been riding it for years and years and years. And it's the quickest way of getting around London. So it's fun, it's exercise, it's saving the planet. It's beats going on the tube any day.
So you mentioned that you don't eat chocolate every day, but you must be the happiest family around. You bribed the children with chocolate in you. Are you?
Actually, funnily enough, only one of my children really loves chocolate. My son is not particularly bothered, although he grew up crawling around the chocolate kitchen that we had in our house at the time.
He must have loved you and all his friends.
Gorgeous food and drink on Radio Gorgeous.
So, Chantelle, 3 successful decades, 4 luxurious chocolate retail shops, I can speak for the one upstairs, in the most affluent neighbourhoods of London, and 5 special books on chocolate. That really is a dream come true and a spectacular career in an enviable industry. What could possibly drive your next steps? You talked about projects, Roald Dahl.
Well, we're looking at opening more shops and planting more cocoa, getting more involved in Grenada. I mean, I've recently been made one of the board of directors of the company there. And, you know, that's really something that I'm so passionate about. And it's almost, you know, a lot of my thinking time is about trying to help solve problems there. And, you know, there's quite a lot of big challenges.
Wow, you're one busy lady. So you've shared your next dream. Any more dreams you're actually having and visions for businesses we should all invest in immediately?
Well, there's something about some red bush tea that might be happening.
Really? Have you been dreaming that?
No, but it's something which might happen.
It's reality. Wow. And lastly, what would you say to others? Would you follow your heart, follow your head, follow your stomach?
I think you need a bit of all of that, but the heart thing is the most important.
That's interesting. And then everything else follows.
Well, if you don't love what you're doing, how can you expect anyone else to love it?
That's interesting. How could you not love working with chocolate? You once said you had a dangerous passion for chocolate. Is that still true?
I suppose you could say that. And the other thing is, you know, the head side, you're talking about the business side of it. I'm not really a natural business person. And I think if you do what you're very passionate about, you could be lucky enough to be able to earn a living doing it, but you probably won't make a fortune.
You certainly seem like a very capable businesswoman to me. So let's hope for all of us that it never runs out. To all chocoholics, artisan food lovers, and all Radio Gorgeous listeners out there, you really should now believe that dreams can come true. Mine certainly has today. I think I'll just try one more of these superb little lime and caramel truffles here. Thank you, Chantal, and Rococo Chocolates, for your time talking to Radio Gorgeous. Keep listening for more indulgent podcasts by women, for women, with only women's voices. Thank you, Chantal.
No, thank you. It's been an absolute joy.
And for me too, thank you so much.
If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it.